All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, June 9th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings, or DFSR.com. For short, here to talk a full Friday in baseball. And we were talking a little bit off the air. The pitching today, oh baby, no reason to even.
Aside, if it weren't for the existence of Corey Kluber, spoiler alert, this could be the worst day I've ever seen. I was just reading the pairings off, and it was like, I think we landed on Jordan Montgomery and Dylan Bundy being maybe the second most qualified starting pair tonight. So, looking pretty rough.
The list is long of the days where you call it the worst starting pitcher.
I will probably
tend to agree with you on, or it's at least a little closer than some of the other days where you've gone, for full superlative on something, or maybe a little.
That's fine. Why don't you just talk? I'll just sit here and I'll listen. Go ahead.
I honestly think that'd probably be better. But the only problem there is every once in a while I'm going to need to take a sip of my water or something like that.
No problem. I'll just say good call then when you're taking a sip of your water. So go ahead.
You mentioned Corey Kluber. Now we're getting to a point where we sort of discussed this yesterday with McCullers, and it ends up being the case every once in a while when a day like this comes around and the pitching is so clear cut on the top tier of guys that we get into a problem of ownership. The problem is ownership percentages, right? Like, so on FanDuel, he's only 10-5. It's just too low. I'm not saying that FanDuel should price correct based on level of competition, like around the other arms, but because his price is so low, 85% start in cash games. I mean, higher. This happens every once in a while. I hope you're not going to stick to the good. It's going to be terrible, and it's going to make me laugh the entire time. So it's going to double down on the terrible.
Right, just be warned, if you're rude to me again, I'm going into good call mode. But yes, you're right on Kluber. The price is simply too low, and it's just a running theme. And I don't know, maybe FanDuel has some data that says that this is just a more fun way to do it, because it really is painful to have a daily fantasy team where you don't have a good pitcher. And it is a fine line, because if you go even a little bit too high, all of a sudden you have guys batting seventh and stuff on your team, and like, that's just not a fun experience. So maybe that's why they do it. But it also just, at this point, it feels a little bit like a competitive balance issue. Like, it's not, that doesn't take any skill to just jam in the most expensive pitcher every night, right? So yeah, it's a weird situation.
Yeah, no, he's going to be really highly owned. Like, if he was, like, again, if he was like 11th, even he could be like 11,000, 11,200, something like that, and maybe the decision becomes a little closer. He'd still be the clear chalk, but I'm saying he's going to be overwhelming in this case, because there really aren't that many other ways to pivot. You can pay down for a couple of guys. I can't imagine why you'd really do it and feel that great about it. We'll talk about a couple of these other arms. One is particularly interesting, but yeah, in terms of Kluber, his numbers this season are just kind of Corey Kluberish. He's striking out about 10 per 9 right now. The XFIP is just in a fine. I know he spent some time in the DL, so I guess every once in a while worried about injury, but 3.34 XFIP. Yeah, 10.5 Ks per 9. Walks up a little bit over his career, but not to any kind of alarming degree. I think he's the highest or second highest money line guy in the day. This is all to say, it's not going to take any sort of deep dive from a casual fan to figure out that Corey Kluber is the clear cash game play here. And then again, we only just start wondering about how the crazy ownership percentage. We saw this in the NBA too, right? Like, when the prices didn't correct on guys late in the season, you would just get night after night of 80 to 85% starts on, the Tyler Ulysses of the world or guys like that. And that's, you mentioned it being fun. It's just weird. It is an edge killer, but DraftKings, you don't have the same exact issue. He is more expensive there. You probably have to make a decision at 12-6 on DraftKings about where you're going to go with your starting pitcher too. I still think it's probably worth it.
He's going to be hugely owned, I would guess, on DraftKings too.
Well, the other thing is too, is like, not, it's not like any of the other pitchers are all that expensive. You get him at 12-6, then you get Urban Santana's 11,000. What a joke! This is where I wonder. And I know he had run hot on some ERA stuff early in the season, but 11,000 for Urban Santana, I gotta go meet the person that rosters in 11,000 and just have I just gotta pick that person's brain. I just need to know what's going on, why you would do this anyway. So Urban Santana.
Well, you get separation. And then, I'll tell you that much. For big, you'll be out on a limb if you pick Big Irv on 11,000.
Separate yourself right to the bottom of the pack. But and then after that, you take a $3,000 dip down to the Tanner Roark's, and then there's a bunch of other guys. So there, they did price correct into the point where he is significantly higher. It's gonna eat way more of your salary to roster him. I still think I'm still with you that because the other guys are so cheap, people will just be able to get there anyway, so it won't matter. But yeah. So anyway, long story short, Corey Kluber is and will be the chalk play, which I learned from yesterday, where the definition of chalk came from. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
But he'll be the chalk play. After that, starting pitcher two or pivots on FanDuel, at least for tournaments. Where else can we look here? It's kind of a sea of mediocrity and then worse.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not the worst day of pitching ever, because that would be a hyperbolic statement to make. So there must be a lot of I'm really excited to hear about all the great arms that you've kind of...
I'm not saying that today isn't. I'm just saying that you've seen
from all this, from all this soil. You know, you just like kind of dug through diamonds in the rough all over the place. But for me, I was not able to really find anyone. That's not very good good for the podcast here. But, I mean, I guess Michael Wacha is still a human being who stands on the mound and throws the ball pretty hard. His K per nine numbers are up from the last three seasons. He's always had the stuff to support a high K rate coming out of the minors. You know, like he really looked like a potential next big thing kind of guy. They jumped him very quickly through AAA into the majors, and he was actually good in the majors his first season too with a 9K rate. Since then, he struggled with injury, hasn't really completed a whole season. His K rate's been under 8, but this year it's ticked back up. The consistency on Wacha has not been there. Like, he's gotten there on the Ks, but he's, let's see here, aside from one start in his last 7, he's given up 2 or more earned runs than all the other ones. He simply doesn't get quality starts. He hasn't made it out of the 4th or the 5th inning in his last 3. So, you know, I'm making a pretty strong case against Wacha here. That's because he's not been very good. But to me, he actually does at least possess the upside. Like, if things break right for him, you could see 7 innings of 7 or 8 Ks, and that's a lot more than you can say for most of the guys in this slate. And I think even in big tournaments, frankly, it might be correct just to play Kluber there as well, but in big tournaments, there's going to be heavy ownership percentage on Kluber. And if it's just like he had a bad start a couple starts ago, if it's one of those nights where he has a bad start, you're going to want to look somewhere else, and maybe Walk is a guy you can look at there.
Yeah, Philly's been a team that's really struggled against righties this year. They're one of the worst in the league. They're seventh in strikeouts. The OPS is down near the bottom of the league against that split. They're just not a very good team. Bad pitchers have looked pretty good against them at times. So Wacha does come in as a nice favorite here. I'm with you on the K numbers. You can make a case that he's been running a little bit bad here on the BABIP and also on the strand rate. So both of those are down over his career. So the BABIP is up over his career average, and the strand rate is just a tick down, which is probably leading to the discrepancy between the ERA and the XFIP. So I think I'm fine playing him as a starting pitcher too. I'm not crazy excited about it. Like, this wouldn't be a situation that I would like want to play more buy-ins with this kind of cash situation, I don't think, just because Wacha also strikes me as a guy, and maybe this is just he's a guy that I've rostered before, just watched him.
Pretty painful.
It can bring back for him pretty quick, like when the walks get there and if the K's just aren't materializing. But no, Philly is a good they are a good matchup if you and he's just not that expensive, and that's pretty much the case for him.
Well, I think where a lot of the edge might come from on DraftKings today is there are guys who have names that people will recognize, and they'll just kind of throw in there, I think, in their starting pitcher 2 slot. Guys like Julio Teheran, Matt Harvey, Rich Hill, maybe even, if they're just put their thumb over the walk rate this season.
You can have a pretty big thumb.
I can't cover all this walk rate. It's so big.
I hold them almost on my thumb over this, and I'm still seeing numbers pop out of that walk rate. Rich Hill's walk rate, we kind of talked about this off the air. Rich Hill's walk rate reminds me of, like, when you and I are having a catch in the backyard and I have one throw that isn't that good, and then, you know me, I'm very mental, and then all of a sudden the balls are
flying. Where this is headed,
and then we just have to stop because
it's like a Rick and Keel situation with Rich Hill and you. You guys are all like,
I would compare myself to backyard catch Rick and Keel for sure. Like, it's all going good for an inning, and then all of a sudden one gets let out, and then and it's time to head inside to have a beer because the catch is over. Anyway, Rich Hill, no, you can keep going because there are these names.
Well, all I'm saying is just there's a lot of guys. Even Matt Schumacher has had some success this season, but he's up against the Astros, who have positively dominated on the offensive end. There's just a lot of names I think people will dip into, and, you know, just because DraftKings does get you sort of conditioned to just jam in a guy, right? You're like, whatever, man, I get Kluber, I'm just going to put someone else in here. And I do think Wacha is just frankly a cut above some of those other options, and it's not a huge cut, but given the other kinds of mistakes I think people are going to make, you could do a lot worse than playing Waka. But there was actually a really off-board guy that you pulled up earlier that I'm curious to hear a longer take on, because we decided to save it for the podcast.
Well, yeah, Brad Peacock is a guy. I'm actually not sure he's going to be that off-board. I think people are going to play him. Like, Peacock's a guy.
Really?
They played him a little. He was a guy people talked about last time he pitched some. And it was mostly just the concern going into his last start, at least from my point of view, was when you make a transition from the bullpen to the starting rotation, you run into a problem of pitch count, right? Like, you need to be stretched out. This is the term for people in baseball use. And just because you can't go from 30 pitches to 100 pitches overnight. There needs to be a pretty long runway on that. So the first two games, he didn't make it out of the fourth inning. His peripherals are unreal since he started. Now, last game, he did make it to the sixth. I have not actually specifically looked at the pitch counts, which I'm going to do after the podcast, because I need to make sure he wasn't running hot. But if you look at his game log, it doesn't strike me that this was – I have a feeling that his pitch count was getting up there, because he went six innings. He faced 24 batters. He had four hits and a couple runs and nine Ks. There have to be a decent amount of pitches to go into that kind of stat line. Like, it's not like he just one hit and was able to get out of it. But so, like, I suspect, without looking at it, that his pitch count has risen dramatically. They clearly plan to keep him in the starting rotation. If he's a guy that you think can go five and a half innings with these peripherals, then I think he's a better player than Waka, right? Now, the question is, what do you believe about his stuff? Because he spent time in the majors where he's not been all that good. And now,
I was going to say, there's the one thing is the pitch count, but then there's also the thing that concerns me is his long track record of poor pitching. So that was the thing that kind of got me.
So this is where, and again, we've run into this issue, and maybe we're just paying more attention to it this year than in years past. But I feel like there's been, and that could be it.
Well, a lot of baseball is on autopilot, right? So this is the stuff that you wind up focusing on, the big outlier, the edge cases, and that's where a lot of edge comes from, because a lot of people are going to interpret this poorly. Like, we see it in our chat every single day. Well, someone will come in and say Benintendi again, or just whoever's running bad who shows up in the optimal lineup. Like, knowing the difference between somebody who's running bad and has had a change in underlying skill set is the whole game. So I think it's worth a deeper dive.
Peacock this year is just throwing a brand new pitch, right, that he's never thrown for his career. He's been a four-seam fastball guy the entire time, maybe about 55, let's average out to say 55% of the time. This year, out of nowhere, the first time ever, according to Pitch FX stuff, he's throwing a two-seam fastball 16% of the time. So and basically that's all come off of what he threw the four-seam fastball with. So he's developed a completely brand new pitch. Now, he was pitching out of the bullpen, and it's easier to pitch out of the bullpen, especially with new pitches, but because you're just not going to have to run through the batting order more than once. Like, you can kind of just light it up for the inning that you're going to be out there and just walk off and not have to worry about managing it. But when a guy throws a totally new pitch and there seemed to be some kind of success rate with it, even if the sample size is small, my ears perk up at least to say this could be real, right? Like, it could be a real thing. Do I think he's going to keep striking out 13 batters per nine? No, obviously not.
I do.
Okay, good call. But but I do think that it's just interesting, because if you look at his season long numbers, the 13.5 K rate he's actually sustained as a starter. The four walk rate that all came from his relief appearances, right? Like, so he actually hasn't been walking anybody since he got into the starting role. So I don't know, starting pitcher too. Like, is that enough of a case for you? He's around the same price as Waka on DraftKings. Is it enough of a case for you to like be able to pivot there and play Peacock instead of Waka?
Yes, I think so. I do think that the case that you make, because the thing about Waka is we're kind of trying to get him back to a level of performance he's never really been at either. So it's like, both of these guys have scattered track records, but at least Peacock has been good recently.
Right.
And while we don't like to focus on that as like the only reason to play a guy, like, if I'm trying to think of a good comp, say Matt Harvey this season had good peripherals but had kind of run bad in his last four starts, I would rather play a guy like Matt Harvey who has both the track record and the underlying skill set. Waka, he might, big time speculatively, might have the skill set to get back to that top level, but given that he's never really shown it and Peacock has never really shown it either, I'll go with Peacock. Yeah, I think that's a very, very good case. And I, if anything, I think maybe the floor is higher on Peacock. Like, sure, maybe he doesn't go that long in terms of the innings pitched, but he did throw 86 pitches in his last start, okay, and that leads me to believe that he's ticking up towards 100. You know.
Yeah, no, that's good, and that's a. I'm glad you looked that up because that was actually the last 86 pitches for me, and I'm sure if you looked at the trend, it was probably ticking up all along the way, yeah, right? Absolutely. So if you thought he was going to hit like, let's say he boosted by 10% now, and he hits like around 95 pitches. That 96 pitches, then
94 and a half.
I was right on to 95, and then I got 80, and then I had 88 in my head when I did it again. But yeah. So if you think that's the case, you know, mid 90s pitches, then I think that's just good enough against an Angels team. No Trout. Vegas likes these guys. If you compare their Vegas lines, Peacock's slightly better money line. Both of the teams have around the same implied run lines, although that's just kind of a rounding error. So they're basically the same, and I look at Peacock as just maybe having more strikeout upside. So I think this will spend part of the day just making sure some of these inputs are correct, and making sure that we just feel comfortable with the Peacock thing. But I think that I'm okay with that kind of pivot. And after these guys, you're right. There really isn't anyone to kind of like focus on some of these games. You mentioned before, how bad do you feel just being a fan that bought a ticket for some of these games that that are going on tonight? It is.
Oh, you wouldn't want to go out to Safeco tonight and grab the Sam Gaviglio Joe Biagini matchup?
I mean, it sounds enticing, but no.
That sounds like the local Catholic League game where I was growing up. It's Notre Dame versus Christian Brothers Academy.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. Like, even like Harvey's been garbage this year. Tehran's really struggled this year, and the list just gets considerably worse as you roll down. And we're gonna actually talk.
It's hard to find a game with a single good pitcher in it, much less like Rich Hill and Amir Garrett, like Jeremy Hellickson, Michael Wacha, Davies Delgado. Like today, we might want to go, instead of just listing off all the good stacks today, maybe just talk about a couple teams we don't want to stack and just assume that all the other ones are in play. I'm not even kidding. Like it's the craziest day I've seen ever, Doug, ever in my entire life.
All right, before we get to the stacks for this evening, tell us about our new sponsor.
Yeah, sure. Our new sponsor is In-Game Fantasy. In-Game Fantasy is a mobile interactive fantasy game. It's available on iOS and Android. And basically what you do is you select players as games are in progress. So there's no real lineup lock. It's an ongoing contest that goes throughout the night. So perfect for people who love to sweat out their other DFS contests, or if you're going to be in line at the grocery store, or after you put your kids to bed. Basically, as long as you can be available for 3 innings worth of at-bats, and I'll explain that in a second, then you're good to play In-Game Fantasy. So the really cool thing about it is, while regular daily fantasy contests have salary caps and you make your lineup in advance and kind of it's out of your hands, In-Game allows you to just play the role of the manager, right? You go in there, you have a list inside of their app of all the batters that are on the on-deck circle. You can pick one if you'd like. You don't have to if you don't want to. So if you actually just want to keep picking Mike Trout or Bryce Harper or whoever, you can do that during each of their bats when they come up. But what you do is you pick from the available player pool, they go up to the plate, and they have an at-bat just like they would in a real-life game. You know, the interface looks a lot like sweating out a box score on ESPN or Yahoo or any place where you like to sweat them out. Your guy hits a double, he's on second base, and then you pick the next guy up. If he knocks the guy in, you get a run, and if he doesn't, no points scored, just like in real baseball. So, yeah, In-Game Fantasy, they held a free roll for our users yesterday. We're setting up a free roll between our staff, the DFSR staff, and our users as well. So, check them out, In-Game Fantasy. I really like these guys so far. Use promo code DFSR to get an additional bonus as well, and we'll see you over there.
Yeah, I played this yesterday. I was home kind of watching baseball kind of fun. Most of the day. It was a lot of fun, man. It's like, because you're getting, it's like, it's just real-time simulated fantasy baseball, and that's what, you know, you and I spent a long time kind of just playing, you know, simulated fantasy baseball for a long time, yeah, and this did. Is kind of like...
Not in like a nerdy way, in like a really badass way.
Like a really, really, really super cool way. It's been a lot
hard, hard to come through on the podcast, but it was actually not nerdy at all. It was really cool.
It was way cool. Like, our wives absolutely loved it. So, like, you know, but, No, be able to play, like, in real time and kind of grab those edges when you see a nice matchup come up. It's if you're watching baseball, this is almost like a perfect companion app. And I'm saying that actually just as a user, not because, you know, they're a sponsor too. But this, every once in a while, sponsors come around that we just really do like, and this is one of them. And so, yeah, go check it out, the FSR promo code. All right, bats tonight. We didn't even nod at it. We just pointed directly at it and just kind of yelled at baseball for being this bad with pitching. But, you know... You kind of sort of half-heartedly joked that we should talk about this team's not the stack. Are there teams here that are coming above the rest that we can kind of take a look at on a day where if you don't play Kluber, you basically have your pick of bats that you can play?
Yeah, there are. So the first one that my eye goes to is Boston. And even if you do play Kluber, frankly, you can still get a lot of these guys in there because Kluber's just not that expensive and there should be reasonable value elsewhere today. Also because keep in mind that while, you know, Boston has a nice matchup, and I'll explain it in a second, a lot of teams are going to have nice matchups. So a lot of those cheaper guys that are batting first or second randomly for any given team. Who was the team you were saying earlier bats a random guy in the two spot every day?
Oh, the Nationals.
Yeah, so whoever bats second for the Nationals, Brian Goodwin, you know. But yeah, since there's basically no good pitchers going, that allows you to get expensive bats against bad pitchers and then make up the periphery with cheap guys against bad pitchers. So the first place I'm looking is Boston, and that's just primarily based on Jordan Zimmermann. I mean, this game right now has a Coors Field sort of line at 10.5. That might even go up by the time we get to game time. And Jordan Zimmermann's the entire reason why. He's never been much of a strikeout guy, but the strikeouts have gotten even worse. They've dipped down below 6/9 for the last two seasons. The walks are coming up, and perhaps more troubling for him, he's always struggled with the long ball, but now his ground ball rate is down to 30%, so he's really doing nothing well on the mound right now. 5.5 xFIP is about as bad as you'll see for a guy who can go 11 starts in the majors. I don't know if this is his last start of the season or not, but it's not going to be a good one, and I'd be happy to get as many Red Sox in my lineup as I possibly could.
Yeah, the run line is coming mostly on the Boston side because Brian Johnson actually for the Red Sox has been pretty good this year. Yeah. We didn't mention him before, but he's pitched 14 innings, averaged 7 innings per start with a strikeout per nine rate. So I can't imagine he sustains that, and the ERA is definitely a little bit run hottish for him with the BABIP. But
and this really isn't the game where you want to be a left-handed pitcher necessarily too. Like Detroit has Kinsler, Cabrera, Martinez. Like they have a lot of guys that can beat up left-handed pitching, but yeah, he's a noteworthy guy, maybe not for this start, but for next start that I have my eye on.
But either way, the line there started at 10, has climbed up to 10.5, and I take it back, because actually that run line did climb up on the Detroit side, so I misread that when I was looking at it. But either way, Boston's still in a great spot today. You could probably even make a case like with this new run line for the Tigers side of the ball. You mentioned my joking about the Nationals. The Nationals are one of these teams where it's like them and the Diamondbacks, where they just cannot choose who's going to hit second for them. And it's hilarious because not only can they not choose, they continue to choose the wrong guy. Like if you can't choose, just move Harper one up in the lineup. Like I'll never understand it. Like hit Harper behind Turner, or just hit Harper leadoff. I mean, whatever, Turner's fine enough, so it doesn't matter. But we went through this all last year. If you can't figure it out, just move the guy with the profile of a second hitter just up to second, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Either way, they continue to hit random dudes here. It could be Brian. Last night it was Defoe. Could be Brian Goodwin tonight. It's who knows with the Nationals. Either way, the Nationals are in another great spot tonight against Andrew Cashner. Cashner, he falls into the R.A. Dickey club of guys who walk more, guys who allow more free passes than they do actual strikeouts this season. He's striking out 3.86 Ks per nine, 4.32 walks per nine. Oh. He has gotten completely away. He has people were going to say, 3.39 ERA. This guy couldn't be luckier. He's 0.269 BABIP, 80% strand rate. His xFIP is more than two runs higher. It's up to 5.5. He is awful.
That's real bad territory. Yeah.
He is real, real bad. The run line reflects it. The Nationals are right around a little north of 5 runs tonight. I love Harper here. Turner again. Turner, you know, he went off last night. Really just if they hit Adam Lind in the middle of the lineup again, you could see him pop up somewhere. So I'm not exactly sure what they're doing with their lineup right now. We'll definitely know before game time because it's one of the early games, so I'm not really sweating that part of it out. But they are a team that we have been able to grab value on because they continue to shift around some of their batting lineup pieces. And when that happens, like when you get bench, basically just the easy DFS 101 thing is when you get bench guys that kind of all of a sudden hit near the top of the order, those are the exact kind of guys you're looking for, especially when you have an expensive pitcher. So really like the Nationals, and I like the idea that we're probably going to get at least one value bat out of their lineup, possibly two. After those two teams, where else can we look tonight?
I mean, we can basically, again, look anywhere. Like I was just looking at the Pittsburgh-Miami game earlier. The combined DRA of the pitchers in that game, the starters, is 13.6. So that seems like a reasonable spot to target. And actually, I like Pittsburgh in more of the off-brand stat category here because while they don't really have any big names that have gone off this season, Vegas still likes them for a very healthy run total. So, you know, when stuff like that happens, it's good to think about what Vegas might be keying in on there and try and take advantage of it, because, you know, a team like Pittsburgh is just never going to have an implied run total near five. And given that they do right now, that is a big potential spot both for value for big tournaments and to potentially fill in around the edges in cash games. Because like I said many times, you don't need to take every single batter from a team in order to get value there. You can get two or even three off and still feel pretty happy about it. But that's more of an offbeat one. The one I was looking at just to probably going to be a little bit more commonly played is just back to the Astros again. The Astros just dominated right-handed pitching this season, still sitting atop the majors with a 351 WOBA, and they're up against Matt Schumacher, who's been a pretty good pitcher this season, but getting him out of LA into Houston is a big time step in the wrong direction in terms of park factor. And while he's had some good starts and he's been sort of a fantasy darling, he's really not like the top tier pedigree guy that some people make him out to be. Not many people, but that some people have made him out to be. So I wouldn't mind jamming some Houston lefties in there as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Diamondbacks too. They're another team that will switch around their lineup. But that actually kind of happens more when they face lefties, not with righties. With righties, they do seem sort of locked in on Blanco, Peralta, Goldschmidt, and then Jake Lamb. So I do. I can see them getting. I can see getting in some of them against Zach Davies today. Davies is striking out 6.5 per nine, more than 3 walks per nine. He's just kind of a guy. Like, he just doesn't not necessarily terrible, but clearly not very good. Diamondbacks are coming in north of 5 runs as well. Great park for them. And again, like Peralta and Blanco, especially Peralta in the mid 3000s, and Peralta or Blanco, if he's hitting leadoff still at 2800, I have no problem playing him there either. So I could definitely get in on the Diamondbacks here. Really, it's just kind of an embarrassment of hitting riches tonight, and that's really the issue. Is that where this is actually the case to play kind of maybe multiple slates and maybe just roll the dice on a pitcher on some of these smaller slates, because the bats are just in. Like, if you can get a slight edge on at least like after Kluber, like if you can get a slight edge on like a Peacock or a Waka on like a turbo slate, I haven't looked at them all exactly, but if you can grab it just a little bit there, there's so many great spots for bats. Like, even the Dodgers are in a great spot. Amir Garrett has just been an absolute walk machine, and they have a bunch of platoon guys that they could stick near the top.
That's what I mean, and like it's an embarrassment of riches on the batter's end tonight. It's going to be hard to feel like you get. Like, normally I don't have too great a difficulty scratching my itch when it comes to big tournaments and all the stacks I want to get in there, but there's just so much value to be passed around. Really, the thing that might stop me is I don't know if I want to get, like, 5x the normal buy-in exposure on Brad Peacock or whatever, because
right.
There really isn't the pitcher support for a ton of different batters. But, yeah, it's a crazy night here.
Yeah, like in the Dodgers lineup, that's one we would hope that we would get in time. They're like a late start. Sometimes they come out a little late with these lineups. But, you know, if they hit Forsyth at the top, I know he's really struggled, but still, I'm fine continuing to play him at this price if he's going to hit leadoff at 2,500. And they'll stick like Gutierrez and Hernandez in the middle of that lineup. And lefty platoons are clearly where their bread is buttered. So, and they're coming very, very cheap too. Like, the Dodgers are, as a team, coming all under, there's only one guy, and that's Seager in the projected lineup that we have right now. Only one guy in Seager that's over 3,000 for a team that's going to put up 5 runs against Amir Garrett, who's walked the absolute ballpark. So these are the guys, this is on FanDuel at least, like these are the guys that you can slot in there and make it very, very easy to round out your lineup and DraftKings as well. So a lot of different ways to go. Definitely a night to keep an eye out for lineups. I mean, we always need to do it. Our system adjusts in real time when lineups come out. But if you're not a member of the system, you go there right now, dfsr.com/MLB. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by a lineup lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And if you have it in you, go move those thumbs over your phone or over your computer and give us a rating on iTunes, preferably 4 or 5 stars. That helps us move up the charts, get more listeners, and we'd really, really appreciate it. I said 4 or 5 stars because we don't want those 1-star reviews. Just go listen to somebody else, right? Go rate us and review us on iTunes as well. Buddy, talk to you again next week. Good luck with baseball tonight, and let's get it.
Good call.